How do labor unions feel about President Donald Trump? We'll discuss the current and potential relationship between the labor unions and the Trump administration this hour and break down areas of concern and possible cooperation. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our conversation is prompted in part by President Trump meeting with the president of the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, at the White House this week. The two discussed trade and infrastructure, stagnant wages, jobs going overseas, and a loss of rights on the job. And our conversation is also prompted by a listener request. We got a listener request on Monday, during Mondays with Mike, asking that we do more on labor issues and with labor unions. So this is a part of that. We welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So do you think President Trump is a friend or a foe of organized labor? Are you a union member? What do you think of President Trump's performance so far? Some organized labor groups have praised President Trump for ending the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Pact, and some are hopeful about the jobs that could result from the proposed infrastructure rebuilding projects. But others are wary of other issues like national right to work legislation that has been introduced in Congress. And the talk a while back that Washington might be interested in doing to federal employee unions what Governor Scott Walker and Act 10 did to state public employee unions. So let's welcome our guest. Frank Emspach is with us. He is the CEO of Workers Independent News and an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you today? Beautiful day.
Yes, and it's good to have you back. It's been a while since we spoke.
Good to be here. Those are a lot of questions you asked.
I know there's going to be a lot to talk about here. Well, I'm just going to ask you that real general question. Do you think President Trump is a friend or a foe of organized labor?
Well, let me start off with the fact that he's the president, and he basically is the titular head of the Republican Party. And if we look at it that way, we have to say, what are the Republicans doing as an organization in regards to organized labor, as opposed to whether or not there might be a personal relationship or whatever, which there doesn't appear to be. But overall, the Republican Party, state by state, is advancing legislation that basically eviscerates public employees if they can get it passed, one way or the other, like here in Wisconsin. Secondly, other states, like in Wisconsin, passed right-to-work legislation, which has nothing to do by this time, I think the listeners know this, with the right to work and everything to do with whether you pay union dues for services. And then finally, you have in the bureaucracy, the federal bureaucracy, the OSHA, Office of Safety and Health, Occupational Safety and Health, all kinds of rules that are there for the protection of workers and the citizens at large. And those, many of those are now in the deregulatory limelight, so to speak. Some have been eliminated. And it may sound arcane to people, but when you, for instance, say you don't have to track certain types of injuries, that means when they occur later that you don't know if it's a recurring thing, and hence you can't deal with it. So the overall elimination of protections, the attack on public workers in many, many states, all of this is what the Republican Party is doing. And President Trump has not disavowed any of it, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So on a national level, he could speak out and say, I worked with the building trades in New York City when he built Trump Tower, among other projects. And so national right to work laws or attacks on the system, the federal system, a prevailing wage, I don't want to do that. He's never said anything like that. Just to be clear here, these laws and whatnot probably sound like they're you know, what are they? What do they do? In the federal sector, you've had something called the Davis-Bacon Act since probably the 1930s. It was originally something that Republicans supported, because the idea was you would get federal money. We're talking about the Depression here now, and for a project of some sort. And at the time, you had different companies bidding on these projects, as they should. What the Davis-Bacon Act says is that you cannot use federal money to reduce wages. You can't undercut somebody using federal money to run the project. You have to pay the prevailing wage. And what this did is it stopped the race to the bottom in terms of using federal money to undermine local working conditions. And that Davis-Bacon Act is central to the way in which the whole infrastructure of the construction industry operates. Clearly, if it disappears or it's attacked or somehow vitiated, then you are going to see federal money going to, say, a company that does not want to pay the prevailing wage, effectively undercutting the wage structure of that community. So that's sort of the economic and social milieu here. In that mix comes President Trump saying he wants to have some relationship with organized labor. So that's an awful lot there that's going on that could, in basic policy ways, make a personal relationship or a one-on-one relationship mean very much.
Well, it's interesting because there was a piece in the news recently that said something similar to what you just explained. It was saying that some unions, some organized labor leaders, looked at President Trump warily, saying that they approved of some of the things that he was doing, like canceling TPP and the infrastructure project that might provide a lot of jobs and some other things, but they were very wary of Republicans in Congress, and that they were wary of this legislation in Congress, like the so-called right to work legislation. So you're saying, though, as the de facto or the head of the Republican Party, Republican President Donald Trump should speak out and make clear where he stands on these issues?
Yeah, he should do that. And if we take it from a wildly optimistic point of view, he could do something like President Nixon and pass and really fight for strengthened occupational safety and health laws. Let me just say why this is so important. 30 years ago now, I represented people at a General Electric facility in Boston, close to Boston. We had a substance called beryllium that we were manufacturing. They were using it in the making of aircraft instruments. It's a carcinogen. Everybody in the business knows this. Well, last week, finally, they began to talk about dealing with beryllium in the workplace. So how many people have died over this 30 years? This stuff is very, very toxic. And so OSHA, as an organization, needs the kind of funding that we're talking about for the Defense Department. And, that's on the block as part of these basic cuts. So I think that there are things that affect many, many workers beyond the trade union movement that are sort of targeted by this administration. Now, a union's job is very complicated. They have two things they do at once. They represent the workers in that organization, and those workers expect that the union leadership is going to fight for jobs and better working conditions for them. But they also serve in this society as something that uplifts all working people, because to the extent that they can, they are setting standards for employment and wages. It's a dual function. Well, President Trump has gone to one group, building trades, but others, and said, look, I'm going to be a good guy in infrastructure. We're going to put money in infrastructure, and you're going to be able to get some of it because you guys are all workers in infrastructure and the building trades. He didn't say at that time and or since that he would fight for the prevailing wage law. In fact, he may want to get rid of it. We don't know. But the infrastructure thing in and of itself is interesting, because in the budget that he announced that came out, there wasn't the kind of commitment to infrastructure that he was talking about during the campaign. And so that's one reason people are saying, well, yes, it would be nice if we fixed the roads in this country. But what's happening? What's happening specifically is this. President Trump said, of course, in support of the pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline and Xcel were built with American steel. Well, Friday, they admitted it wasn't going to be built with American steel. The pipes were already there, and that was it, so too bad. But he also canceled the grant to the state of California for $650 million, which is going to build an upgraded rail system from San Francisco to San Jose, which is already under construction. There's several hundred million dollars already invested in it. People are working. So you get sort of a mixed message there.
Let me jump in because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about issues important to workers and organized labor and the relationship between President Trump and labor. Welcoming your questions, welcoming your thoughts on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Frank Emspach, who is the CEO of Workers Independent News, an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers. And we are talking about the relationship between organized labor and President Trump. And we're talking about issues that are important to workers and laborers that and organized labor in front of Congress right now or in the forefront. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. As I mentioned, our conversation was prompted in part by the meeting between President Trump and the president of the AFL-CIO this week at the White House. Richard Trumka said that that he and Trump talked about some labor-related issues. The two discussed workers who are facing stagnant and declining wages, jobs going overseas, and a loss of rights on the job. Well, how big a problem are these issues, Frank Emspach?
Well, wages have been stagnant for just about 30 years. So most people have noticed this, that they have not gotten a wage increase for many, many years. So it affects basically almost everybody who's working for a living. And so that's pretty basic. The job issue, several million jobs have gone overseas, is also pretty basic. You're talking about policies like with the North American Free Trade Agreement, or tax policies that encourage the manufacturers to move stuff overseas. The reason they do it is to make money. If you have a modern car factory, as they are in Mexico, and you're producing automobiles there, and that factory is competing against a company or another branch of the same organization here in the United States, and you're paying much less in terms of benefits and wages, clearly you can make more money. And so to the extent that it's profitable for firms to move overseas, they're doing it. And those are really fundamental, basic questions as to who does what in this economy. And I don't think that the administration intends to address them. They can bully some companies and push people around and say, well, you know, get 500 jobs back. But we're talking about millions here and a structure that enables this kind of offshore production and repatriation of the goods. So to the extent that the Trump administration is willing to deal with that, then obviously working people and probably the labor movement say that's great, as they did with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But that was already pretty dead before Trump got into office. And President Trump is talking about bilateral relationships with each of the countries. To that end, I think what would be helpful for him to say is that we will have a bilateral agreements if other things are going to be scrapped that enhance and ensure that environmental and wage standards are part enforceable standards are part of these agreements. That is something that isn't there now, and one reason I think the Democrats lost the Midwest. But when we talk about labor, there are many, many aspects to this. There are the building trades who are saying, well, if we get unionized construction infrastructure, that's okay. That's a wonderful thing. You've got other people saying, well, if there's an increase in the defense budget, some of our people work, but many, many others may be negatively affected. And you've got an attack pretty much across the board on public sector unions on the state level. And then on the national level, you look at the budget that's been proposed. There are thousands and thousands of members of the American Federation of Government Employees, as well as people in the TSA, the security forces, that are targeted for elimination. So you have a pretty broad number of things going on that are different, that affect different sectors in different ways. But you do not hear much positive from President Trump. And I think that's one reason that it's going to be very, very hard for him to win over organized labor in its entirety.
Yeah,
I think Trump could send that. That's the whole. I mean, he did not discuss health, as some of the people said right after the meeting. It was on this fundamental issue of wage stagnation and job creation.
Yeah, right after that meeting, Richard Trumka blasted the Health Care Replacement Act that Republicans had introduced right after President Trump had endorsed it. So, I mean, the union issues or issues important to labor are not just wages and jobs. It's health care.
Well, it's health care, too. But in terms of the meeting with President Trump, that didn't appear to be on the agenda.
No, it wasn't.
Judging from what both people said. But your question about labor and the administration, it varies a little bit from sector to sector. But by and large, the Republican position has been anti-labor, increasingly so over the last 15 years. And President Trump, while he may be wanting to reach out to specific sectors of the labor movement, and I think it's clear that he has done that with this meeting and others, it's not clear that he is capable or willing, or anybody in his leadership is desirous of making the kind of legislative and policy changes, as opposed to personal comments, that will actually affect the situation in a positive way. That's the trick here, and I don't see that. And that's one reason you have wariness, but you have some unions say, wait a minute, he's getting rid of all my members. It's not just the members. We're not going to have weather forecasting. It's not just the members. The Coast Guard's going to get cut, you know. So you have this, and on the things that he has promised, infrastructure in the budget, in what they proposed earlier this week, you do not see big infrastructure plans or money. It just you don't see it. So, you know, you say, well, what is exactly he going to do? And this is in the context of a Republican Party offensive against unions wherever they can do it, essentially.
Let me take a call. We have full lines right now. Bob in Chicago is with us. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing today, Joy? I love your show. Very unbiased.
You're very nice.
I have been working in the high-rise construction industry for the last 38 years on all of the coasts of the United States. And one thing that I have found over the years is that Trump has never been friendly to the labor movement. In fact, he's had many run-ins and been sued for not paying benefits, that type of thing. And I just don't see this president being a friend of labor whatsoever. And some of the statements that he's made as far as prevailing wage laws really lowers the bar for everybody in the industry. I'm not talking just about union members like myself, but when our wages are taken and being put down, that means everybody around us will be dragged down in the same context. And I'll listen off the air for that.
A reaction, Professor Emspeck?
Well, that's true. I mean, that's the problem here with him. He talks about infrastructure. He doesn't talk about maintaining a structure that prevents wages from being cut. That's the prevailing wage idea, and it affects all workers for sure. So that's one reason people are wary. Obviously, here in the Midwest, when he campaigned on the issue of bringing manufacturing jobs back and dumping the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that resonated with people. Okay, so the TPP is gone. It was, as I said, dead anyway, legislatively, pretty much. The jobs issue is still out there. There is nothing that he has proposed structurally that will change the current equation. What he has done, and by talking about infrastructure without mentioning the wage system, is leaves the door open to an undermining of the system, which is what the speaker was talking about.
This is not a national issue. It's a state issue. And I'm sorry to throw you this. I hope it's not a curveball. But we had a story in our WPR newscast just before we started that a bill that's up for a vote today in the state assembly would bar local governments from requiring contractors on public projects to enter into so-called project labor agreements. These agreements lay out things like working conditions and whether workers are union members or representatives of minority groups. Supporters of this change say it would level the playing field for non-union contractors. Opponents say it will lead to worse working conditions and worse project quality. Do you have an assessment of this bill that's up for a vote in the state assembly today?
Yes, we've had a lot of experience in this country with project labor agreements. Here's an example. You have a large company, and they say, I'm committed to having 5% of my workforce being people from minority backgrounds. And furthermore, we will support the apprentice programs financially that make the development of skill possible. But, it's going to cost us an extra 5%. And they bid on that project, and somebody says, well, listen, we don't want to pay that 5%. We have this other company here that will make no commitments whatsoever in terms of jobs and discrimination. Never mind train anybody. We'll give the job to them. Well, what the project labor agreement idea is that a city like Milwaukee or Warsaw, any place, can say, when we have public money being used for projects here, we have standards. And those standards include anti-discrimination, training people and so forth. We recognize that there's a cost there, so we will not penalize a company that comes in and to meet those standards. What this legislation the state government does, it eliminates that. It doesn't lower, doesn't make the playing field level, except at a lower level, because the company that does not want to train and does not want to hire people, why should we use public money to support them? That's the same notion as the prevailing wage. You don't use public money to subsidize substandard employers. It doesn't help the community. It doesn't help working people. So the PLA issue here, the two issues in the state, incidentally, there's that, the effect on wages, hours, and working conditions, but also the notion that the state legislature has consistently voted to take away what we call, local government rights, not only on this issue, but several others that deal with labor.
Yeah.
Let me
move back to the phones and take our next caller. Bob in Stevens Point is with us. Hi, Bob.
I'm old enough to remember when automobile manufacturers were in the union states, but then they started moving to right-to-work states. Now, this is long before we saw a Toyota or a Honda. And they seem to thrive there. And the same southern manufacturers, whether it's Boeing or cars, when the labor unions got a vote whether the southern plants should unionize, these workers consistently voted the union down. I think Volkswagen was the last one, and I think that pertained to Boeing, too, if I'm not mistaken. And I'll hang up.
What's your point, Bob?
Well, the workers who aren't union aren't joining the unions. If you want to go to teachers, what's the percentage of teachers that left the teachers union?
Yeah. Well, so I guess let me have you just react to what Bob had to say. I think he thinks workers don't want to join unions. They don't really help workers all that much. And manufacturers will move to a state that doesn't require them to have a union shop.
Well, that's true. It's cheaper for the manufacturer. In terms of the vote, some vote yes, some vote no. The Boeing vote was obviously not a very good vote. 70% of the people said no. The company also said, we're moving down here because of the union up in Seattle, and just think about that. And they didn't like the move down here. So Boeing, they turned the workers against the unionized workers, and that's true. And some of the other plants, they make a case. We're moving here because the union raised the wages. They've got benefits. We don't want to pay them. We'll pay you to do what you're doing. And yes, it's true, there are no other good jobs here, but just bear that in mind. And people do. I think people are very nervous about this because they also see these same companies staying in Mississippi or something for a while and then moving to Mexico. So this job threat is fundamental, I think, to the inability for unions to organize in the South in general. But there is, and people need to know this, a significant and growing union presence throughout the South. That's part of his question. On the teacher issue, if we're talking this about the state of Wisconsin, the teachers' unions did lose membership. But if we talk about teachers specifically, as opposed to support staff or whatever, we acted, the largest state teachers union kept the vast majority of the teachers in the organization. They're paying dues voluntarily now, obviously. So I think that it's a mixed bag. It's certainly not good if companies move from here to from Wisconsin to someplace, either Mississippi or Mexico, and convince the workers that the reason they're down there is because the workers in Wisconsin want it too much. So just, you know, keep quiet and do your job. I mean, that's not a good thing, obviously.
While we're on, you know, Act 10, the related issues, Governor Scott Walker met with Vice President Mike Pence a couple of weeks ago, and they apparently talked about how the administration might borrow a page or two out of Governor Walker's playbook and bring Act 10 to a national level. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, it's possible, right? You have the same configuration nationally that you had in Wisconsin. You have the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the courts, who are, I think we'll see that, basically in Republican hands. And what was the objective here? Walker was very clear. It was to limit the political influence of unions by bankrupting them. That was the idea here, and it has worked from that point of view. The unions are weaker. Everybody's weaker across the board. And who opposes Governor Walker. And so from the point of view of politics and weakening other forms of people who don't like you, Act 10 is a brilliant idea. You say we don't make unions illegal. We're just going to make sure that in the public sector, there's very few things they can do. And incidentally, we have this dues idea to fundamentally make it difficult for them and hopefully bankrupt them. Well, maybe they could, Republicans get it through. I think that notion raises fundamental issues about what people think about democracy. You don't see Governor Walker suggesting we bankrupt some corporation because they have undue influence, let's say, on the EPA and water quality. So, you know, yes, we can go after an organized sector of society. It's possible. It may happen. But that doesn't mean it's good for the country or good for anybody. Will the Republicans do it? I don't know. Can they do it? Probably.
We are talking with Frank Emspach. He is an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers, and he is the CEO of Workers Independent News. And we're talking about issues important to workers. We're talking about the relationship between President Donald Trump and organized labor. We're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your views. Are you a member of a union? What do you think of the Trump presidency so far? What's your biggest hope or fear for President Trump and Congress? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Listening to the Ideas Network, I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with our guest labor analyst, Frank Emspach, CEO of Workers Independent News and emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers, talking about labor issues, issues important to workers, and the relationship between President Trump and organized labor. Our conversation prompted in part by a listener request, and also President Trump met with AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka this week. They discussed labor issues, including jobs, wages, trade, infrastructure. And we're just wondering what you think on the relationship between Donald Trump and labor. Do you think that this administration is a friend or a foe of unions? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Here we had a national focus, but lots of state stories, too. I wondered if you had a reaction, Professor Emspach, to the story we just heard in Wisconsin Public Radio News. Wisconsin lost more than 4,000 manufacturing jobs in the 12 months leading up to last September, marking the worst such period for the state since the end of the Great Recession. Apparently, a total of 27 states lost manufacturing jobs over the same time span. But we did hear Governor Walker in the news saying, "Well, maybe it's not so bad if we have fewer manufacturing jobs, if those jobs have higher wages," and he thought that some of them might. What was your reaction to that?
Well, it's interesting he said that, because in today's New York Times, on the front page of the business section, which is not the most labor-friendly place in the United States, there's an article showing that labor share of income has fallen. And you have a situation, it's not just stagnant wages over the last decade, but a falling share of the income earned, of the wealth produced, and hence increasing inequality. And so this is an issue that deals with a lot of different people. As far as the state is concerned, the jobs are disappearing. And what can the state do to encourage employment? What can the state do to make a difference here? Well, there are certain things that they don't have authority over. They don't have authority over, for instance, the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. The governor's response generally has been to lower taxes, try to get rid of regulations, and so on and so forth. That hasn't worked. So it seems to me you need a much more positive approach, to sit down with the unions and the companies and say, what is going to keep you here in the state? Because if it's just a wage issue, then it's gone. Because wages are a very, very small proportion of any company's overall expenses. They're generally 7 or 8% in manufacturing. So if you just focus on that, you're not going to make it. It's not going to work. And it hasn't worked when people just focus on wages. So I don't think the governor made much of a case there. Yeah, sure, if we get jobs that come back, that's great. At the same time, what we're seeing is an attack on some of those jobs at the university. You're talking about research jobs, you're talking about technicians' jobs, things like that that can pay well. You just had a thing yesterday where we're losing a couple of hundred high-paying jobs here if the the Office of Aeronautics and Space Administration goes through with their job cuts. So I think you need what we would call an industrial policy, something, incidentally, that could be done statewide, a serious investment in infrastructure, not by beggaring one part and paying off another, but a serious look at the tax structure. What it's going to take to fix this state? How would it just as a small example of infrastructure that might work? You have a rail line that runs past O'Hare Airport, and it comes right here to Madison, Wisconsin. Just think of what would happen if you got off a plane and 90 minutes later, you were right here. Would that boost the economic structure, the economic influence, the help in Janesville, in Madison, in Elgin, all the places that are on the line? You know, it's vision like that that would make a difference, and I just simply don't see it. Yeah.
There is going to be another jobs report out tomorrow, but preliminary numbers show, or is it today? Anyway, but preliminary numbers show that the United States added 298,000 jobs in February, Trump's first month in office.
It's been going up ever since the summer, actually, for 14 months. And that was a very good number. But let's take Wisconsin. You've had this huge loss of the paper industry. Towns that depend on these paper mills and manufacturing paper are devastated. You know, that is a function of the trade agreements. Okay, what are we doing specifically in the state of Wisconsin to talk to those companies and say, okay, we'll change the trade agreements. We're fighting like mad against these trade agreements and to maintain these factories. Governor Walker gave no leadership on this whatsoever. So if we're talking about real jobs with real people and thousands affected, as we are in the paper industry, then the question is, how can these facilities, which were profitable for years, become profitable again?
Yeah.
That is a fundamental issue for these towns. And I think that's where the companies need to be taken to task by the governor and by President Trump. What are you going to do to reestablish manufacturing in these places? And I just don't hear anything like that.
That is interesting. But do you, they're saying that this is the best month of job growth in nearly 3 years. You say it started last fall. Do you give Trump credit for this, or to what do you attribute
it's
the
a
growth?
Little, not really, because most of the hiring had already been done. But you've had a steady increase in the number of jobs now for quite a while. So I don't want to say that I don't think it's anybody's fault, so to speak. You know, you can't say, well, in 1 month, the economy turned around because of President Trump. You're talking about him being in office for 50 days by this time, and you've had a steady increase in employment basically for the last 13 or 14 months. So, and I think we're going to see that. Now, I hope it accelerates. And if we see a change that way, that would say his policies have some sense. And particularly if we see a change in the composition of the jobs so that they are better paid jobs, manufacturing jobs, technical jobs. Right now, the strongest growth in the economy across the board now, you know, for many, many years, has been low-paying service jobs. So we'd want to see a shift in the content, the type of jobs, as well as the wages. But to your earliest point here, the relationship with labor, you have different people in the labor movement who may or may not benefit in different ways from changes in the sectors, in each of the economic sectors. So clearly, people who may benefit are not going to be going after the president with an axe. And people who are saying, wait a minute, you're taking my job, will be upset. But overall, the question is, are Trump's policies contributing to raising the standard of living of working people? And so far, we have seen talk, we haven't seen much action, which is why people are wary. What we have seen is institutionally the Republican Party has gone after the ability of unions, particularly in the public sector, to survive, and with a national right to work law, so-called, would also go after undermining the private sector. So it's not something where President Trump is leading the charge here to fight for worker rights. He hasn't said anything except in his business practices in Las Vegas and elsewhere, he has not been particularly pro-union.
I'm going to try to get in a couple more calls. Michael in Green Bay, what is your question or comment?
Good morning. My comment is concerning the trucking industry, the transportation industry. It's so heavily regulated today what a truck driver faces based on the responsibilities, driving conditions, environmental conditions. It is, in fact, across the board, the lowest paying industry in this country. A solution, the feds have said for a long time that they're after safety, thus the regulations came on. Safety will be found when legislation says that truck drivers are to be paid hourly, that this old federal exemption that truck drivers or companies do not have to pay overtime, when that's turned over, you're going to find safety in that. New minimum wage standards have to be set, and in one way that this can be done is that certain minimum wage standards have to target certain industries. I'm saying there should be a minimum wage standard for truck driving across this country, which means you do not put a driver in that truck.
Yeah, Michael, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're almost out of time, Michael. Do you see the Trump administration or this Congress doing anything about this?
Well, I don't know at this point, but bringing this out on this show, that, you know, somebody in the Trump administration, if they're listening, the trucking industry has been ignored for too long.
All right. What do you think, Professor Imspach?
Well, I wouldn't say it's been ignored. It's not been helped in the way they call their raises the question. Of course, the minimum wage has to go up. You cannot ask people to do what they're doing and not pay them. So there's got to be a change in the way the industry is dealt with. There's no question about that. But the trucking per se, the prior administration was very eager in having Mexican trucks come up from Mexico and make deliveries in this country. And that kind of regulation is still, I believe, has now been implemented. So there are a couple of different aspects here. The minimum wage one for sure, as well as other types of regulations. These I would call them protection. It's a protection thing for a worker who has to go to work and make all these other adjustments, you know, to deliver something on time, so on and so forth. You need to be paid properly. There's a shortage of truck drivers, according to the industry. And one reason there's a shortage is because people are not being paid properly.
We have Paul from Eau Claire emailed, when criminal illegal workers are deported and immigration curtailed, the labor market for Americans will improve because we will no longer be undercut in wages or have an easy supply of cheap labor. I apologize for the 1 minute we have left. What's your thought on that?
Well, it's not been historically true, and it's not true now. If you got rid of every single person in the state of Wisconsin who is a so-called illegal human or person, right, working on these dairy farms, I do not see, and I don't think the writer sees, thousands of young people flocking to dairy farms to take care of the cows. The reason that the migrants are there in the first place is because workers were unavailable, and I don't think they're going to be available now. So I don't think that argument holds water in terms of the jobs that are being done, the people doing them, or the people who are displaced. There's no basis for this to say that an American worker generally is losing a job because of an immigrant. And that's why I take the paper industry as an example. If they has nothing to do with the job loss in paper, which was fundamental, is fundamental to the state's economy.
Well, we'll have to have you back soon. Thank you very much, Frank Imspach, for being with us. Frank Imspach is the CEO for Workers Independent News and emeritus professor in the University of Wisconsin Extension School for Workers. Thank you to Bill Martins and Niaja Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.